Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
How was your weekend? Anything exciting?
I watched the Star Wars movie.
And how was it?
Interesting.
Disappointing?
Well, no, it's just, they've, you know, it's been a trilogy three times. So you are seeing, you know, an end to a show again.
To be honest with you, I know nothing about Star Wars.
Yeah.
And I am going to say this on recording.
Controversial.
I don't like Star Wars. If I had a pick between Star Wars and Star Trek, I'd pick Star Trek every single time.
Is it because you know Star Trek?
Like, no, you've seen Star Trek? It's because Star Trek is more interesting.
Yeah.
Star Wars is boring. Star Wars is a weird thing that I am not a fan of. Well, I think it's very strange that so many people are obsessed with Star Wars.
It's part of my family legacy. I mean, my uncle did start the whole thing after all.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, my Uncle George.
Totally.
But, yeah, I mean, it is definitely something that, like,
I don't think it's actually
I don't
the movie
need you
itself.
To redo it. Anymore.
Yeah, I think it's
leave it alone.
I think it's actually has nothing to do with the movie itself.
Yeah.
It has to do with the fandom is the problem.
Yeah.
I don't like how
I feel the same way
are.
About the Seahawks.
Yeah, I just
Seahawks are fine. The fandom drives me insane.
I just don't like any of the
controversial
the
statements.
And, well, it's just more like I get it. You like Baby Yoda. Cool. You're obsessed.
And Baby Yoda is brand new too. So
it's just
that's
it's
interesting.
Just marketing ploys.
Boo!
Which is fine. Whatever. I do marketing, but...
All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podcast for Good. This is Season 3, Episode 44, Double Fours. We're talking healthcare advocacy. My name is Heather Lucas. I'm the Fiscal and Policy Coordinator for the Washington State Combined Fund Drive, and I am joined by...
Jerrica Ferguson. I handle marketing and development for the Washington State Combined Fund Drive.
Yeah, you do. Hey, so we're going to talk healthcare advocacy, and we spoke with Janet Varon. She is the Executive Director at Northwest Health Law Advocates. So, Janet was great. I really thought that her interview was great, and the thing that she had to come talk about, healthcare, was so relevant, and it's kind of ridiculous that we are in 2019, heading into 2020, and people are still having to fight just to get some basic healthcare.
I think it's different than that, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's, yeah, there is definitely a fight for just basic healthcare, but even the current healthcare that we have, it's unfortunate the amount of issues people deal with between their medical, the people that actually receive the medical treatment from,
mm-hmm.
to the insurers, to the actual final care itself. It
yeah.
seems like there's a larger fight to be had between the people actually treating you and the people charging you, and the people that are supposed to be insuring you. And it seems to me that, you know, before we can really get to these places of solving things, we really need to truly look at how the system is ran and how we can currently solve that too.
Yeah, and I mean, for people like us, we're state employees, so we have healthcare as part of our job benefits package. But like, even having healthcare that we don't have to go out and fight for and fight through, just getting some services that we need or want or that will make our lives better, it's still not easy.
No, and it's difficult too if you are thinking about, you know, whether you're in state employment and you want to get out or you want to move from the private sector and get into state employment, that's a big conversation of how much your employer puts in and how much you put in. And it's just, it's unfortunate that it's not easy or simple. And even as two individuals that are relatively young and understand the understand technology and how much access there is out there, it still mm-hmm. can feel overwhelming.
Yeah. I like that you said that we're young and understand technology, and immediately in my head I was like, what about the Google? In my head, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about the Twitter and the Google.
You may not know Twitter.
Well, I do. I have tweeted twice.
Whoa.
Yeah, I tweeted twice.
I need to look you up.
I know, right? Good luck. I have no idea what my Twitter handle is. That's how much I care about Twitter.
But you got Twitter handle correct.
Yeah?
You actually said it right. You didn't say, you know, the thing, my name.
Oh, my tweet name or something?
Yeah, tweet name.
Yeah, yeah. Hashtag new band. Tweet name. I'm writing it down.
I like that.
Good.
I like
tweet
that.
Name.
Tweet name.
Yeah, I like that too. We should really start a band with all the band names we come up with. Let's
it's
just be
gonna
real.
Be a lot of bands.
Yeah,
but I feel like they're
we'll
all gonna
be like
say
the
same instrument.
It's true. We'll be like the band in Parks and Rec, changes their name every 3 days. Mm-hmm. You know, Andy's band.
Yeah. I feel like just sometimes it can create inspiration.
Yeah, yeah. I'm inspired.
Super.
I'm inspired to hear what Janet said and share that with everybody who's listening. Are you inspired?
So inspired.
All right. Well, let's do the question of the podcast first. If you could choose any cause in the history of humanity, you know, our 5,000 years or whatever, mm-hmm. however old we are, in the history of humanity to fight and advocate for, what cause would it be and when?
This might not be an answer that makes sense, but I think
I'm going to accept it already.
Well, so I think something like the Great Depression is something that for myself I would really believe in and be able to advocate and fight for people that are experiencing that. Really, the country was experiencing that. Because I think I grew up during the financial crisis like yourself,
mm-hmm.
it's something that really touches me very hard since my parents were affected by the financial crash of
2008
to 10. And so for this, when I think of humanity, I was visiting D.C. this past year, and they have the FDR Memorial, and part of the memorial is actually this Great Depression part.
Okay.
And it's men and women lined outside a what looks like a brick wall building, and they're mm-hmm. getting food at this corner lot. And it just shows you of all these individuals that came from, whether that was super wealthy or super poor, all needing the same help.
Yeah.
And I think being able to be a country to come out of that grew a lot of their own humanity within each other. And I think that's something that I would want to continue to, you know, I would love to have been able to be in a position of being able to help that
mm-hmm.
cause and prevent it if possible. But then, of course, help people get through that and continue on. Because I do believe that even though the Great Depression was many decades ago, we're still feeling those repercussions, and then even after the financial crisis of 08, continuing that, we haven't learned our lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that we need to continue to fight towards.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
Well, when I was a kid, I always thought that I was born in the wrong decade.
Mm.
Like, I should have been one of those kids that grew up in the 60s.
Mm.
Yeah. So
I didn't know this.
Yeah. I just, it felt right. Like, I was just, like, popped into the wrong space. So
okay.
I'm like, all right, well, I got to deal with Super Nintendo is cool.
Yeah. So what was your cause?
So civil rights, women's advocacy, gay and lesbian rights, like all of those tie into human rights. So it didn't matter. Like, to me, it was all kind of the same. It didn't matter your gender or the color of your skin or the people that you loved. Like, it was all something that people were fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
And I always wondered, like, I would have wanted and imagined myself, romanticized myself as mm-hmm. a person who would have been there on the front lines protesting or like, you know, writing and talking and,
mm-hmm.
and being part of the movement. But I always wondered if I had the tenacity and the backbone to do it. You know, it's a different time. It's a different era. And you can definitely say, yes, yes, I would have been one of those people. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know,
you never know.
You never know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would have been a great time to like be a human and
That's
just
great.
To feel
yeah.
like a human.
So human rights is your cause.
Mm-hmm. Human rights are everybody's rights.
That is a great cause.
Hey, I like it. So we'll talk a little bit about human rights with Janet Varon. She's the executive director of Northwest Health Law Advocates, so we'll talk about that. But more than anything, healthcare advocacy. Here's that interview. All right, we're here with Janet Varon. She is the executive director for Northwest Health Law Advocates. Janet, thank you so much for joining us today.
thanks for inviting me, and happy to be here to talk about NOLA, which is our short name.
So can you give us a little history about NOLA and what you do for the community?
Yes. So we started NOLA. I started NOLA in 1999, so we just celebrated our 20th anniversary.
Congratulations.
Of advocacy on behalf of consumers to promote access to healthcare. So what we're doing is trying to ensure that our healthcare system provides affordable quality care for everyone in the state of Washington. And we are particularly interested in vulnerable populations who tend to have barriers to access, both in terms of cost and other factors that in turn create disparities in how people access and healthcare and the outcomes in terms of their health.
So who do you serve? Do you serve the entire state of Washington, or what areas are you working in?
Yes, and we are not a service organization in the sense of serving individuals. Mm-hmm. We are more working at the policy level.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
Our targets are really the state of Washington, policymakers, decision makers, and also healthcare providers and insurance companies.
Okay,
very good. Okay. Could you actually talk a little bit about the current state of healthcare as it pertains to your work?
That's a big question.
It is a big question, and there's so much going on. It's sometimes hard to prioritize what problems to address because it's a very fragile system.
Yeah.
And as you know, at the federal level, there's a lot of efforts to try and change things, to do some repealing and some weakening of some very important laws that that we care about.
Yeah.
The Affordable Care Act in particular, and I have to start a discussion about access to health coverage with the Affordable Care Act because it did change so much. It expanded the Medicaid program from some pretty narrow eligibility categories to adults generally who are low income, and it created these health insurance exchanges, one of which we have in Washington, to provide subsidized coverage to people up to four times the poverty level, and it's also available to people above that income level to try and strengthen the marketplace and also to do away with pre-existing conditions and the ability of insurers to reject people from coverage. It restricted the what's called age banding so that older people aren't paying extremely high amounts for coverage, although they're still paying quite a bit more than younger people.
Yeah.
So many, and non-discrimination protection, so many things that have really improved health coverage, and we've seen it in our state because we've seen the rate of uninsurance drop quite dramatically. So that's one aspect of it, is the coverage. Of course, we also care about the care.
Of course.
And actually people getting what they need.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard to navigate the insurance market and insurance coverage and figure out what you're eligible for, how much it costs, and what services you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to fight for the services that you need. So we are right in there trying to represent that. Be the voice of consumers in that big system that is sometimes very confusing.
So you said that you are on the policy side of that. So if a consumer wanted to reach out and saying, like, I have I'm having difficulty navigating this situation, you guys would just refer them over to the actual Medicare or Medicaid situation, the exchange.
We would do that. We would also refer to advocates who do services.
Uh-huh.
So we work closely. We're lawyers, and my background is in legal aid, legal services. So I represent for a long time, 13 years, I represented people who were on public programs primarily, who were trying to get care that they were having trouble with and other public benefits.
Okay.
So I really have that perspective kind of firmly rooted, as do people on my staff. And so we... we'll refer to that group, and we'll also, we maintain a connection with that group in terms of trainings.
Mm-hmm.
We also work closely with people who are staffs at community health centers, hospitals, and other places that also are trying to help people along. So a lot of what we do is training in the community, letting them know what the laws require, what what rights people have, how to figure out what to do in a particular situation. Mm-hmm. And one example of that is that people have an appeal process for when they're denied health insurance coverage mm-hmm. for something. And so we worked with the insurance commissioner to get online a database of all the decisions, not the full decisions, we're still working on that, but yeah. the summaries of the decisions on these appeals so that somebody who is unrepresented yeah. or who is represented can go download an Excel spreadsheet for their insurer or their condition and yeah. find out, you know, has a similar mm-hmm. case been heard and overturned? Yeah. What kinds of reasoning was involved there? What kind of evidence? Yeah. So that maybe they can put together their case for getting coverage, because
the playing field
is not yeah. level yeah. in these yeah. situations. Yeah. So we're trying to,
because not everybody can be represented in that way of
exactly.
their own, especially
people,
with cost.
Yes,
especially
and most
with cost.
People aren't represented. Yeah. So having access to these tools is somewhat of a help mm-hmm. In that situation.
So when you mentioned the healthcare exchange for the state, what is it called and what agency or what group is managing that?
So it's the Health Benefit Exchange. Mm-hmm. It is a public-private entity, so
okay.
not a state agency.
Okay.
I don't know if they're a part of the CFD, but they are partners definitely with the healthcare authority, because
okay.
there's they run the application system now for both insurance coverage through
mm-hmm.
the exchange and the healthcare authority programs. So you go through a single door, and the coverage, the application has been merged.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So they can say either you're eligible for this because you're below this income level,
mm-hmm.
or if you're above that, you're eligible to enroll in an insurance plan. They're called qualified health plans through
okay.
the exchange.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and they'll tell you what your subsidy would be in
yeah.
terms of tax credits.
Could you actually talk about you kind of touched on some of the challenges that you see, and within your work, what are those kind of systematic challenges that an average person deals with that you see kind of on that daily basis?
Yes. So, there are many.
Yeah.
Yeah.
First, I'll just talk about the most vulnerable populations because
yeah.
they have the greatest difficulty, I would say. So somebody who is limited English proficient really has a hard time in the system even figuring out what health insurance is and how to select. So, of course, having tools is great, and the exchange, for example, and the healthcare authority have created some of those. But having tools in your language
yeah.
and a way you're comfortable understanding and learning about this is also really important. So we've actually been working with agencies to provide better language access, translate their materials, their websites, and provide assistance, in-person assistance through their consumer services lines
mm-hmm.
and so on. And then there's also, of course, the issue of getting an interpreter when you're getting care, so you understand what your doctor's
yeah.
and what your instructions are for
yeah.
follow-up. And that is really still something. We work closely with an organization called WASCLA, which is interpreters working on language access.
Oh, okay.
Because they see it firsthand, you know, how often there are problems with non-English speaking people
mm-hmm.
getting care. So that's really an access issue. Another example is people with disabilities, you know, just using making sure that the agency they work with or the provider uses the tools that can help them participate in their own health care. But then there's also the whole big world that many of us are familiar with of working through the costs of health coverage and figuring out whether you can afford coverage
right.
and how to look at things like these big deductibles that many people are experiencing
yeah.
now. And an issue that has recently been active on the policy level in a good way is surprise billing. So people who, and you probably know someone who has gone to an emergency room and then gotten a bill from one of the providers there that isn't in their insurance network, and how could you know, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How could you know in advance that the anesthesiologist or the laboratory
yeah.
was not in your insurance
yeah.
network? So there was a bill requested by the insurance commissioner, which we were actively involved in, to prevent surprise billing.
Yeah.
So taking the consumer out of the middle of the dispute between the provider and the insurance company,
yeah,
and setting forth a process for them to resolve what the payment should be, but the consumer just pays the same cost sharing that they would pay if they were in,
right,
in network.
Yeah.
And this also applies not just in emergency situations, but when a person goes to an in-network hospital or,
right,
ambulatory facility, but it turns out,
yeah,
that somebody who is providing care there wasn't in their network, which,
yeah,
happened. So we're hoping,
yeah,
that this will help everyone get on the same page, and there's actually national legislation around this being in Congress, pending in Congress right,
yeah,
now. We don't know if that's going to happen. But in Washington State, for regulated insurance plans, this applies. It does not apply to self-funded plans, which are, you know, large employers will create their own insurance,
mm-hmm,
and that's not regulated by the insurance commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a provision in this bill to opt in, so,
mm-hmm,
any employer could opt into this system, but,
okay,
so far that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
So we're eagerly watching the implementation January 1st of,
okay,
this. Of this new law.
Yeah. So it just got passed in this April.
Yeah, this past session,
okay,
yeah.
Very nice.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
After a number of years.
So there's obviously a divide in belief. Some people view healthcare as a right, and some view it as a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
So how, in your experience, how difficult is it to get both groups of people to have discussions about improving these systems and improving healthcare and our access?
That's a great question. And we believe healthcare is a right.
Mm-hmm.
This is really what drives us,
sure,
to try and get everyone on board. So I think that it's hard. In this state, I think there is a recognition, and this is what helps bring people together, that whether it's a right or a privilege, it's for the best society.
Mm-hmm.
So we can disagree about whether everyone gets everything, but we do see many ways in which the health of Washington State, the economy of Washington State,
mm-hmm,
and the well-being of kids in schools is all affected by access to health care. So,
yeah,
that's really a unifying principle. When there was a legislation to extend health coverage to for children to immigrant kids,
mm-hmm,
which we were one of the first, if not the first, in the nation to do this.
Okay,
you know, there are people who differed on this, but a real, really important talking point was these are kids that are in school together, and,
yeah, yeah,
you know, they can't learn, and they can't, you know, help, you know, they will pass along,
yeah,
illnesses. I mean,
yeah, if a kid's sick, another kid
can
get sick very,
exactly,
easily. It doesn't matter where they come from.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, and I think it has helped in this state. There's actually been some recent, there was a study of studies of the impact of the Medicaid expansion,
okay,
in states that did it versus states that didn't, because,
right,
it's optional. And many of the studies, most of the studies found, you know, that state communities were just better off, and states were economically,
yeah,
better off when they did it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay,
these are talking points that I think are pretty universal.
Yeah,
yeah.
There are many different beliefs about what the healthcare system should look like,
right,
and,
sure,
that's challenging. But what our approach is really, we just want to help,
yeah,
improve things,
yeah,
and whatever we can do is good.
Yeah,
and maybe we're working toward a broader system.
Yeah.
You know, we do see that in other countries that have broader systems, universal coverage,
mm-hmm,
that it's so much easier to navigate. First,
mm-hmm,
of all, and it is also beneficial in terms of the health,
yeah,
of the country.
Well, yeah, everybody is going to have some kind of need healthcare wise. So.
Right. And you never know when you're going to need,
exactly,
something.
Yeah.
And nothing's more heartbreaking than talking to somebody who couldn't get care to manage a condition that they have, a chronic condition, and then that spirals out of control. And that can lead to a loss of function. It can lead to a loss of a limb in the,
mm-hmm,
case of someone's diabetes. It can lead to loss of life.
Yeah.
And we see that not just in the physical health,
yeah,
world, but also,
yeah,
in the behavioral health, mental health world,
yeah,
that There's been a lot of attention lately in our state legislature to mental health access and making sure that people can timely get access, can find a provider. And there have been some really heart-wrenching stories about people who, you know, mom of a kid who didn't get care in time. So these are the kinds of things that really drive the policy discussions, these personal examples that people experience.
Yeah.
So you kind of touched on healthcare that, you know, where you guys are kind of working towards. Do you want to talk a little bit about the work ahead that you're looking towards in the coming years?
Sure. And we work with, it's not just us. I'd like to say it's not just NOLA. I mean, we provide some expertise. We have some experience. We can drive, hopefully, some creative ideas and solutions working with agencies like the Healthcare Authority and the Health Benefit Exchange. So we are always, and the insurance commissioner, we're always thinking about ways to listen to what they're doing and suggest new things. Right now, the things that I'd say we're focused on are implementing these new laws like surprise billing, like there's a new family planning program for immigrants that's coming online January 1st. There's also an expansion of the Healthcare for Workers with Disabilities program, which is a Medicaid program where somebody with a disability who's working can buy into Medicaid for, you know, a premium. But there have been some restrictions, like an age 65 restriction that are being lifted, and some other limits, like resource limits. So we're looking at that. We're very excited about the implementation. We also see some next steps in terms of eliminating some of the coverage gaps and affordability. There's going to be a study this coming year, a planning process that the agencies are going into. What is needed to really truly make health insurance affordable?
Yeah,
focusing on individual health insurance, does the state need to step up and help further than the Affordable Care Act has? Because people are still saying, I dropped coverage because I just couldn't handle it in my budget anymore.
We're
working on, can you, even in the plans that people have, can you put some more things before the deductible so people don't say, I'm not going to that appointment because I'm really paying for the whole thing out of pocket.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the deductible is really difficult for a lot of people.
Yeah. It's a huge problem. And there was a work group that we just concluded work. I hope you'll like the public plan that we worked on, which is going to be offered in the exchange starting 2021. That does put more things before the deductible, such as primary care, mental health, prescription drugs. So that may help actually attract some more healthy people into the market. So informing the community. This is a big one because there's so much roiling around at the federal level, particularly with immigrants who are being getting information that makes them feel they can't or shouldn't apply for benefits that they are qualified to get. So there's this public charge rule. It's actually five courts have prevented it from going into effect, but people don't all know that. They also don't understand it doesn't apply to getting many of the benefits that people are pulling themselves off of.
Right. Yeah.
So we're trying to get the word out on that public charge rule, and or not yet rule. We are working toward universal, equitable healthcare access, trying to understand always what problems people are experiencing, what barriers they're still experiencing. There's been quite a bit of improvement in the state from how things used to be, but there's still additional
things to grow.
So obviously federal government and state government both get to make rules and laws and implement them. So if the federal government is making laws about how healthcare has to be governed in our state, does that limit the kinds of work that you guys can do, like the policies, the changes that you guys can make?
Yes and no.
Okay.
If the federal law says that a state can't do anything better, then we're stuck.
Okay.
But there are situations where the federal law is just setting a lower limit or dropping the limit for states, so we can maintain what we have. We could also improve what we have. And an example is that one of the things the federal government did is said that you could, states could have insurance plans. They're called short-term limited duration. They're very skinny plans, and they're often sold at pretty, they're often a pretty bad deal.
Yeah.
So they are used, I mean, they are useful for people who have a gap between jobs or some kind of transition,
okay,
3 months or so. But this federal rule said states could extend it to 12 months, which really makes it
a long-term
competing,
plan, yeah.
trying to compete at a lower price with plans that are really better coverage. So our state insurance commissioner proposed, and we strongly supported the idea that in Washington, the short-term plan rules should stay as they are.
Okay.
So that's one example. We also are concerned about the watering down of the non-discrimination rule in the Affordable Care Act. There's proposed changes that are on the horizon that would really limit things like that relate to reproductive health, relate to LGBTQ access. We just passed in Washington a non-discrimination provision based on the January 1st, 2017 version of the federal law. So we froze the Obama-era laws essentially in effect in our state.
Yeah,
There's no provision in that we can't do that.
Sure.
So why not? Right. So we're always trying to be on the defensive, and we've worked actually pretty closely with the governor's office and the attorney general on this kind of sort of defense of the standards that we have in Washington.
That's wonderful. So let's say someone hears this podcast and wants to begin giving to Northwest Health Law Advocates. Can you talk a little bit about what donations do for your organization?
Well, every donation helps us be the voice for consumers. Mm-hmm. We, in particular, have put some funding into communications. So we have a newsletter, we have a website that has advice materials for consumers, we have, we do presentations, and so that kind of thing I think is really helpful. We sometimes get grants, but often they're restricted in terms of what we can do, so the legislative work and the policy advocacy we do the donations are really welcome to support that work. It takes a lot to develop, analyze, and determine a path that we want to recommend. So we do appreciate donations in that way. We also appreciate volunteers. We use law students as interns and externs. So we also have some volunteer attorneys. So keep that in mind if you are in the legal profession or policy field. Events. So we have had movie nights on healthcare topics, and sometimes we invite people to come to the movie nights to donate to support those and other events that we have. We do an annual continuing legal education seminar, not just for lawyers, so anyone can attend. It is also a fundraiser for our organization, but we have a full day, which starts with a panel of different agency folks talking about what has happened and what they're looking toward, and then this year we focused on health equity in the afternoon portion, really getting people who are thought leaders in that area to talk about next steps. One idea, for example, is creating an office of equity in Washington State.
Yes, okay. That's right.
So we are happy to have people involved in various ways.
Do you have any upcoming events with dates that we can share?
Not yet.
Oh, it's okay.
We just finished a very busy anniversary year with a big celebration. Yeah. So it's kind of regrouping right now.
Yeah, but taking a break here. Yeah.
Exactly. But we hope to have a movie night in the first quarter or so of 2020.
Okay.
So we will get out the word on that. So sign up for our newsletter on our website, NOHLA.org, and you can find out about these upcoming events.
Wonderful.
So before we go, do you have any programs you'd like to highlight?
I think, one thing I haven't mentioned is that we are pretty active in the reproductive health arena, and one thing we did when the Affordable Care Act came out was to do a secret shopper survey, and this is something that, we can do more of in the future if people have ideas, but we just had folks from the community call insurers and ask about contraceptive coverage. What do you cover? Do you cover X, Y, or Z, and unfortunately, and this was close to the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, but unfortunately, a lot of the people were giving misinformation. Okay. So we used that as a tool for advocacy. So we went to the insurance commissioner, pointed this out, went to the insurance company, said, look, we're going to publicize this unless you up your game here.
Yeah, yeah.
And we actually got them to do quite a bit to work with their customer service and their sales representatives and their websites to improve that information and make sure that people actually could access what they were theoretically eligible for.
Right.
So that's a lot of what we do, trying to kind of ensure implementation is well done. So
yeah.
If anybody has thoughts about that, and I know you have some state employees in your midst, we do often hear from state employees who may not have been able to go through the channels in their agency, but
mm-hmm.
sometimes recognize that an outside organization mm-hmm. could potentially put forward a view that
mm-hmm.
that could be helpful to constituents of their agency.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a little kind of subversive plug for anybody who might have a thought about how to improve the healthcare system externally. So
very nice.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Janet, for coming on the podcast and telling us about NOAA and the amazing things that you guys are doing.
Well, thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
All right, that was our interview with Janet from Northwest Health Law Advocates. So, overall, it was a good interview.
It was a really good interview. I really appreciated Janet coming in and sharing her experience. I actually did not know that we had such an organization. I just didn't realize how much they play a part to create the healthcare, some of the healthcare laws that we have here in Washington,
mm-hmm.
that they were such on the front lines, particularly during the ACA.
Yeah, and like we talked a little bit about surprise billing with Janet. She brought it up, and it's something that like you don't really think about as you're going in to get care for something, right? Like if you need to have something special, like you find out, oh, I've got to have like this whole tonsil, throat, nose, face procedure, right? Like you've got to have something done that's more than just going to your general practitioner. And then you go through all these processes and steps, you get the care, but then all of a sudden there's like charges for things that you don't understand.
Mm-hmm. It's out of network and you weren't aware that they were charging you.
Like you go thinking, I'm going to my people that I'm supposed to go see.
Yep.
This is what my coverage says. I'm here.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, no. Surprise, this is $400 or $4,000, and now you're on the hook for it.
Yeah, and I think that surprise billing is obviously a huge issue, and she brought that up about, you know, the changes that Washington itself laws have changed to help with stopping that, which I think is really important. I think the toughest thing for anybody that goes into a hospital or a doctor or these specialists to get something taken care of, your last thought, and truly your last thought, should be how much is it costing, right? Like, I need this done because I can't breathe.
My quality of life is not great right now. Help me, please.
Mm-hmm. And so you're going in because...
I'll pay you for it.
Yeah, well, you need it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the toughest thing is, you know, you try and do as much due diligence as possible going into these places. And, you know, when you ask the question, like, well, is it covered? And your doctor goes, yeah, this part's covered, but you don't realize he said this part, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She maybe said it was...
subtle language.
Yeah, and those things that's like, well, do I need to really verify every single dime and dollar and dot that...
And that should not be your job.
And, yeah,
that's
and it's like,
job.
Well, why did you use this person instead of that person,
mm-hmm.
and that person's in my network? And I think that's the toughest part is you already are probably getting going in because you don't feel well,
mm-hmm.
and your mind is in the last place of... Is this under my network?
Yeah.
When you've already assumed that it was.
Yeah, that's not where you
and
should be
And if it's not, then I think it's
energy.
Frustrating because
mm-hmm.
then you should just say it's not in your network and then it's your choice.
Yeah.
Which is even sadder because then you have to choose of whether to live with that, whatever that issue is, or have to pay out.
Yeah,
you know?
And like being in a situation like that, having to decide, can I spend the money on this out of pocket right here and now to have this procedure done or this treatment, or should I just stop?
Well, one of the things that was super crazy is when I went in to get my deviated septum, I went to go, it was like one of the first things, and I had to pay down I had to pay something like just for this part of the checkup.
Okay.
And I went into the hospital and they made me go sit in this like little cubby, and across the table was this woman. And so she's like, okay, so this is going to be, it was like, I don't know, $150 or $180 bucks. If you can't pay that, we have a financial plan.
Okay.
And this is prior to my surgery. And so she's like, if you can pay the $185 bucks, that's what it is. But if you have to do a payment plan, we will charge you an extra $25.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, no, I can pay it right now, thankfully. And she goes, oh, that's good. Most people can't. And kind of just made this quip. And I kind of was like, is it really that much more money, 25 extra more dollars? Because instead of someone paying in one payment, they have to pay in two payments is what the thing was. And it just made me really sad because I was like, I'm just fortunate enough that I can –
You
could
do
that
right
money.
Then. Yeah.
Now, did that hurt me? Like, yeah, it wasn't like I didn't realize I was going to be paying money before I could even get into surgery. It felt like a down payment on my own surgery. And so I was really shocked. And then to hear that they're going to charge you more.
If they couldn't
pay it right then and there. And it's kind of like, you one demon warned me that there was a payment. And so I just think that it's just really unfortunate that we're getting into these businesses of, I just think it's really sad that we look at healthcare as a profit.
Yeah.
And that's in every realm, right? Whether you're a manufacturer of a drug company to, sadly, hospitals that have to keep their doors open. Mm-hmm. The way that we're charging patients, I just don't know if it's the right thing when it's a public good.
Yeah. And, like, you can definitely get to the point where it's like, I understand that, you know, there are business aspects here. And these businesses have to make money to stay open. But the amount of money that they're making and the people who need the services, like, there is a big difference in how much money they're receiving and how much money we all have.
Yeah. That's why I'm glad that there's advocates out there that actually do understand the laws and procedures, and that there is solutions for individuals that are people, that are there's an avenue for them to go, like Northwest Health Law advocates that are out there that can actually assist. And what's really unique, I thought, about them was that they talked about other avenues that they can actually direct you.
Yes.
Which I didn't, you know, that's huge because they're not just only advocating for the things that they need to see change, they're also advocating for others for those changes as well.
And partnering up with people too.
Yep.
So, as you may be aware, today is Christmas Eve. So we are right on the cusp of finishing up our campaign. We're going to have all the campaign final numbers to everybody for January 10th, but we had a lot of feedback about a lot of great events out there. So, volunteers, you guys were awesome, and we cannot do this job without you. Thank you so much. Like I said, it's Christmas Eve, so there's going to be a little bit of holiday time off. But when we come back after the new year, we're going to have recognition events. You can nominate volunteers, executive sponsors, your local coordinators for any kind of work that they did on your campaign events.
And it's due by January 10th, so make sure that you get those nominations in for statewide and for Thurston County. And it's best to get those in also for Snohomish and King County as well. January 10th is a good date.
So, yeah, get those nominations in. We're going to be having recognition events starting February and March. We're going to have the plans going. You'll see that stuff coming up probably in February on our main homepage, give.wa.gov. So keep an eye out for that.
Don't forget to rate and review, and thank you so much for listening.
Yes, absolutely. Have a great day, everybody.
Happy New Year.